I think we all grieve in a different way, and for me, putting one foot in front of the other is I'm getting my strength from the kids to do that. So the projects from the kids is what's helping me cope. The trial, I suppose, was never going to give us the answers as a family that we needed. And I've made some calls in the press already for, I suppose, some answers from the professional mental health teams who were treating Dee previous to the death of the children. There's also some talk about changes being made to the Mental Health Act. I believe you learn from experience, and people promoting changes to the Mental Health Act without speaking to the likes of myself and Una Butler, whose daughters, Zoe and Ella, their lives were taken back in 2010, without speaking to the likes of us and learning from our experiences, I don't think the act will be worth the paper it's written on. So there's still some challenges ahead.
Yeah. And of course, in your case, Andrew, and really we're talking about, I suppose, one of the calls that you've made would be that, you know, you would have been included as an advocate and would have been part of you know, care and treatment. And, you know, this is obviously very specific to this case, and I think you've also said that you've no doubt your children would still be alive today, if that's Connor, Dara and Carla, if you had been an advocate. And it was only last week too, and it's different but it's kind of the same, where we were speaking to a father who lost his son by suicide, and they weren't in the loop. Appointments were being cancelled or deferred or what have you. And they weren't being told this. They were being told by their son, no, we're going to sort that out. We're going to sort that out. It's a work in progress. So it's not in cases like yours, of course, but it's also there are families out there who've lost loved ones by suicide that also feel that if they had been able to be involved or to have been an advocate or to have been a contact, that maybe they would have a loved one with them as well still.
I agree totally. Within the recommendations of the Mental Health Act, they talk about a proactive encouragement for the patient to have an advocate appointed. I don't think that's a matter then of debate. It leaves it quite open. What is proactive and what is not proactive? I think there has to be concerted efforts to have the patient and a proposed advocate in the room to explain the benefits of having that. Certainly at the trial, when I sat there, there was information that was coming out from the two medical experts who have had sort of unfettered access to all of these medical records from everywhere that she's attended over the years. And some of the revelations that were coming out were left me astounded. I'm thinking, I shared a life with Dee, I shared a house, I shared a bed, and I just wasn't aware of some of the things that she had been telling the professional services.
Yeah.
And in particular, on the Wednesday when Brenda Wright, the medical expert Brenda Wright, was detailing appointment by appointment, every single appointment, Dee seemed to be expressing concerns about being a parent, feeling overwhelmed, talking about how difficult she found it being a parent. And I just wonder at what stage. I would have thought that the first time she mentioned that, I should have got a call.
Yeah. And I have had a conversation on this program with another person in a similar position to you a number of years ago. And it's like the exact same conversation. And the reason I'm saying that is that we haven't moved on then, clearly, because people are going through this and the red flags or whatever colour the flags seemingly are there, but we're not joining the dots. We're not saying, right, this is something that maybe we need to bring to Dee's partner's attention. You know what I mean? It can't be beyond us to get this right.
Well, back in 2010, when Una Butler's husband took the lives of her daughters, Zoe and Ella, she campaigned long and hard. Some of the people that she spoke to are still in the Oireachtas. Whether her campaigns fell on deaf ears, I don't know. It was deeply upsetting for her that nobody was listening to her. And then 10 years after that, in similar circumstances, Connor, Dara and Carla die. I can only hope that people will listen now to both of us. Mm. And there are other people, as you gave examples. If they do not listen to us, then other people will die. And it is as simple as that.
And if there are hurdles, let's overcome them. But we have to sort of say, right, this is what we want to achieve. And the sooner we do it, the better the outcome there are for other people in similar situations. You know, I just don't think that this can be the subject of so many different, you know, roundtable discussions, conversations and interviews on radio stations, committees and reviews and this, that and the other. I mean, as I said, this surely is something that we can put the right protections and measures in place to protect people where they need to be protected and their privacy and what have you, but also have a system that best ensures, nothing can ensure 100%, but best ensures that no person has to go through what you've gone through. And what?
I think talking about patient confidentiality, I mean, it's crucial. I mean, a person's medical records is their own personal business, but we were together. We were a couple. We were, as I say, sharing a life, a house and a bed. I mean, of all the people that back then I would have trusted with Dee, and I would hope that she would have felt the same. It wouldn't have been a far reach to say that this is my husband and I'd like him to be an advocate. I just think the word proactive encouragement, it's wishy-washy. It needs to be, there are more, the benefits of having an advocate far, far outweigh the cons. So for me, we need to think about that a bit more. And particularly when you have a patient, because I'm a fairly logical person and I use a lot of common sense. And when I think about mental health or mental illness, it's going to impact the mind. Mm-hmm. And your mind is where you make your decisions. It's where your thought process is. It's how you formulate your responses. So any question that you are asked and you have a mental illness, then the chances are your responses and your decisions and your thoughts are impacted by that illness. For me, that's logical. And I can't believe that that is best practice. Asking a patient presenting with a mental health illness and you're taking every response, every decision and every thought that they're laying out to you as being absolutely factual and unimpacted by their illness.
Yeah,
I struggle to think that that is best practice globally.
And there's something as well that really doesn't rest easy with me, Andrew, is that you're sitting learning stuff at the trial. Do you know what I'm on about? That you're having to process, well, why wasn't I told that? Or surely this would have been obvious. Or why wasn't that done then? The fact that so much time is passing and then you're actually, you know, getting really, really quite important and pivotal information while sitting at the trial.
Well, there is that patient confidentiality. And I suppose the because there isn't an advocate signed, the professional services are relying on the patient to come back, in this case, Dee, to come back and tell us what she needed. Of all the people that she, I suppose, wanted to, that she didn't want to know how bad she was, it was probably me. She wanted to put her best foot forward and to, you know, do the best that she could. So certainly when I would come in the door, I was seeing a Dee that I knew, you know, wasn't the Dee of old, but she was doing her best and responding, and she was going to all her classes, she was taking her medication, she was doing everything. So I, other than being able to sit down with the experts, I'm just like, at the trial, there was information coming out. So even not to break that confidentiality, the professional services could have rang me and said, right, Dee was in with us today. What did she say to you when she came back? And I could have said, well, she told me A, B, and C. And they could have thought to themselves, actually, she should have said X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
You know, without assuming he was going to go back. Yeah.
The goal could have been achieved in a roundabout way with just a little bit of a different way of thinking about things.
With a bit of common sense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know you were asked this question, but like you sat through the trial. I don't know what you were thinking going into it. I don't know. I'm not asking you this, but you can comment as much as you like. What your feelings were going into it? Did your feelings change during it? And your reaction, I suppose, to the outcome. That's as far as I'll ask you in anything personal like that, if that's okay, Andrew. And comment as little as much as you want to in that regard.
I knew that the trial wasn't going to give me any of the answers that I needed. I mean, I within the trial, Dee's diagnosis before the children died was outlined, and it was different to her diagnosis afterwards. So as I sit here chatting to you, I'm no clearer or no wiser as to where that changed. Now, I know the HSE have issued one or two statements. I don't think they release an official one. I haven't seen an official one. It's only to some of the media outlets who have told me what the HSE have told them. They speak about patient confidentiality quite a bit. Well, they haven't even spoken to the patient. So the professional services who were treating Dee before the children died have not reached out to Dee to, you know, explain to her why her diagnosis was different beforehand. And why is it different now? Because logic would tell you that if the diagnosis was possibly wrong beforehand, then so too would have been the medication, which throws up more questions. Mm. So even Dee herself needs to hear from the professional service. So that talk about confidentiality, well, it's patient confidentiality and you haven't even spoken to the patient. Mm. And they also talked about that when there is a, let me get this right now, I think it's when there is a serious incident. So what they call a serious incident, they mobilize their interagency response team. Now, I would consider the murder of three children by one of your patients to be a serious incident. So I would have to make the assumption then that this interagency response team was mobilized promptly. Probably I would hope that it would have been mobilized then in the days after the children died to see what had happened. And where does that response go? So they talk about this wonderful interagency response team. Was it enacted? Was it put into motion? And where is that response? Is it created and then just put in a filing cabinet and job is done? Or is it shared with the patient? Is it shared with the family of the patient? Is it shared with the Minister for Health? I don't know, but I was glad that they brought it up because I wasn't aware of it.
Right.
So I'm delighted to know that there is this interagency response team that reacts to serious incidents. And if they turn around and say now that it wasn't, then they don't consider the murder of three children by one of their patients a serious incident. And that is more worrying. So I think there's only one solution for the HSE is to meet with us as a family and to go through what the treatment and the that Dee had whilst in their care.
Yeah, but also to you're advocating for Dee a bit there too, in that that you believe that she needs to be spoken to, and that's a very difficult space. And it was just notable, and I think it's a measure of you, Andrew, that you feel that you have to advocate a little bit there, if that's the right word. I'm not trying to formalize it, you know what I mean? Yeah. But you still have that in your head that, you know, you're not the only one needs answers, really, I suppose. Is
well, yeah, I mean, I accept that what happened to the kids was an act of insanity. It's the only way that I can think of it. And I'm sorry that the details of what happened to the kids came out, because I had requested that it wouldn't. However, it was a trial by jury and open court, so those details I was told had to come out. So I have to, and anybody, I suppose, who listened to those would probably agree with me that it was an act of insanity. So I can accept that. So Dee now, during the trial, speaks of a wonder drug that she's on, and that she has capacity, is the legal term, to be able to stand trial. So she understands what has happened and everything. So she is left looking for the same answers. So yeah, we just need the HSE to work with us so that we can get those answers. I will never recover. I will never heal. I doubt D will ever. We just need this to help us, because it just, I suppose it's just part of the grieving process. You just need to understand a bit more.
Yeah.
You'll never heal. I will be heartbroken forever.
Well, you're never going to be complete again, obviously. So you move forward as positive as you can, presumably, Andrew, and you keep the little angels' memories alive and all. But I mean, you have to accept that, you know, I mean, if I were in the same situation, you can never be complete again, but you just have to move.
Well, that's why, you mean, for me now, it's moving forward positively with life. Yeah. I try to focus now on the positive things in life, and I suppose what I'm doing for the kids are the positive strands of my life, and that's will be my sole focus.
Will you
now
talk us through those? Because it's really, really important.
How long have you got? Because I'll talk about them forever. It sort of started when I, on the night they died, you begin thinking about the last time you talked to them, last time you held them, the last time you kissed them. And for me, I started thinking about the last promises that I'd sort of made to them that I hadn't got around to fulfilling. And for Connor, we were sitting it was Christmas 2019. We were sitting, and after dinner, he asked me, would I help him set up a YouTube channel? So I said that I would. He didn't really know what he was going to put on it. So he was a funny kid. He had a great sense of humor. He'd just make you laugh all the time. And so we figured we would do some comedy sketches. And I said, like, you know, so you have Dee, you have me, you have Dara, you have Carly, yourself, you know, we'll be able to film some comedy sketches, but we need to build up a bank of comedy sketches. So he started writing. I shared one of them on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. So we were going to build up about 20 and then start filming so that we could upload one or two a week. But
he really had this planned out, didn't he? That he had to have a catalogue there for the launch and everything.
All I have is the clips of the kids that I want to share. So that's Connor's clips is on YouTube, and I support that on Instagram and Twitter. Twitter I quite like, actually. So we're on there, and they had such a huge interest in the internet. So that, and you know, so that was the promise to Connor.
He wanted to be a YouTuber, and you, and I suppose us, by support, and can fulfill that. We can fulfill that dream.
Yeah. I mean, I love the engagement to see. I mean, if I am feeling a bit down, I'll find a photograph and I'll put it on Twitter and all. And yeah, that keeps the name alive. And for me, it's all I have left. Is they had such short lives that by doing these projects will give them, in my mind, a longer life. And I can't do that unless people help me to do it.
Yeah. And you can be proud too. And it allows it allows you to say, you know, this is what I created, and have a look. And then if people like it, you get that pride. And I think that's really human and lovely.
So Carla's one was, she wanted a snowman. So it was November 2019. We were able to scrape enough snow together to about a pint glass sort of a size. And I remember looking at me going, is that it? So I promised her a bigger snowman. But because it doesn't snow every year, I'm hoping to do a sort of colouring competition for Carla. So I'm trying to get a sponsor for that. But the main one for me at the moment is Dara. So Dara was, he wanted me to coach in Rathcoole Boys, and I said that I would. And but Dara was about more than that. He was involved in everything. He was in commercials hurling. He was a Niamh Ward guy in Sagard. He was in the drama club. He was in the athlete. He just liked getting involved. If you were doing something, Dara wanted to be in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So the charity is going to help clubs and societies to encourage people to participate as Dara did. So the name of it is As Dara Did, in memory of what Dara did was participate. He got stuck in there. And there was a couple of lovely stories that one of the school mums told me one day that her daughter came back with Match Attack cards, the little football trading cards. And she said, where did you get them? And she said, Dara gave them to me. And she goes, Dara wouldn't have given you his football cards. She goes, no, I was standing there watching the boys play Match Attacks. And Dara said, did I want to play? And I said, I didn't know. And he said, he moved over and he sat down and he gave me some of his cards so that I could play. Now, knowing Dara, he gave her West Brom and Fulham and all her, and Liverpool, yeah. All his worst cards. But he just loved getting involved. If he knew that somebody was doing an open day, we just everything else was dropped. Mm. You had to drop everything, and he was there with his glass of fizzy and his chocolate muffin at the open day, seeing what was going on. So, if all the charity ever does is sponsor open days, then we'll have done a great job. Mm. We've already done the Donegal Town Basketball Club new kit and equipment for the basketball team for the under 10s in Donegal Town. And we've done the Carrick-na-Barr swimming pool in Cork, some new equipment so that to encourage kids to come in to learn how to swim, etc. So we're reaching out already.
Brilliant.
And then the final project is the two lads were prolific comic book writers. And so I'm going to take some of their characters and write books about those characters, but Connor, Darren, Carlo will appear in those books as well. Supporting characters to keep their memories
and them immortalized in the comic books. It's beautiful. It's there's so much meaning and it's also relevant, you know, Carlos Snowman and Dara inspiring young people to get involved and Connor, who sounds to me like you know, wanted to be a big YouTuber, no doubt about it, and I'd say he would have got there. You mentioned Donegal Town. How important are your memories of up here, Andrew?
Yeah, my parents are still up there. They're in reasonably good health, so I'm hoping to get up there again soon. But there's been fantastic support from the whole of Donegal, which means a lot to me.
And I think, you know, with what went on, everyone feels it. You know, like, feels your pain and wants to support you, but has some understanding, as much as any of us ever could, the awful experience you've been through, you know, but can empathise as best we can in trying to get our heads around what it must be like. But I think you know that, Andrew, and you get that, don't you?
Yeah. No, I do. And I'm thankful to everybody who's reached out to me. I had put out an appeal for letters when lockdown was announced. I think and it shows my naivety at the time about social media, because I had no social media at the time, but I put out an appeal for letters, and a friend of mine who had more visitors sort of said, would they retweet that? And I didn't know what a retweet was, but he had 5,000 followers, and sure, next thing I'm looking at 10 boxes of letters in my front room. All right. And I couldn't really, loads of those came from Donegal, to be quite honest with you, and from all over. So I'm thankful to everybody who did reach out and who did make contact.
Okay. Listen, thanks very much for speaking to us. How are you going to split up your time? Because it's all serious work, but, you know, there's an escape and a release and sort of something heartwarming about working, you know, on the As Dara Did campaign, Connor's Clips and Snowman for Carla. And then, of course, I can sense you feel a responsibility to try and progress the very much more serious side of it. You have to strike that balance in what works for you and what's okay for you, I presume, Andrew.
Yeah. I mean, for me now, I do a lot of engagement every day with Connor's Clips, but the charity is taking the focus at the moment. We're through Ocean's 13 style. It's a sort of a soft launch, so we're open for donations and reoccurring payments. So if anybody signs up for a recurring donation to us, there's a quarterly prize. At the moment, Niall Quinn has put up that signed Man City jersey. I think next quarter he's trying to source now a Man United one, and the quarter after that a Liverpool one. So we hope to have a good quarterly prizes for anybody signing up for a monthly donation.
And you could barely get the words Liverpool out of your mouth there. There's a recurring theme here, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, somebody will be need a rag for washing the car. So, you know,
good one.
But I'm grateful to Niall. He's been very supportive.
Yeah.
And we're looking at an annual event as well. And the amount of support that I've got from that from around the community from Louis Fitzgerald, who owns my local pub and owns a few pubs in Dublin, the hotel. And Sodexo, who I work for, and Derry Clark, who does a bit of work with Sodexo. So they're going to support me with an annual event. But we'll launch that in September. But if anybody does want to go on the website, www.esdarrah.ie, esdarrah.ie, they can have a nosy around. We're still sort of finding our way with it, and it's a work in progress, but we'll do an official launch in September.
And let us know close to the time if we can offer any assistance here, obviously, because I know you want to stay connected, as you are, of course, with Donegal, but anything we can do to help. Listen, thank you, Andrew.
No, thank you very, very much.